All right. This is Emily Reformat, the editor of Automatic Merchandiser Magazine and Vending Market Watch. And here we're here with Pete Tullio, live from Washington, D.C., on the line. Hi, Pete. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Emily. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. So tell us how the public policy conference has gone.
Well, it's definitely been the best public policy conference that we have had yet. And I know that's hard to believe in view of the government shutdown, but it is quite the contrary. We really had a very engaging time with our congressmen. And maybe as a result of the shutdown, we were able to see considerably more congressmen face-to-face and congresswomen, of course. And we were able to spend more time and discuss some of the more important industry issues with them. So all in all, I think it was quite a beneficial thing for our industry because we really got some important points across.
Can you share some of those important points, those specific issues you discussed?
Well, one in particular, we met with the Mint, the U.S. Mint, on Tuesday, and the big discussion there was over this Sense and Sensibility Act, which is the reformatting of the nickel specifically, and turning the nickel into a coin that has steel in it instead of nickel, obviously to save money. They tell us that it takes 9 cents to make a nickel, which is, you know, relatively crazy. And they think that they can save $40 million by doing this. And we pointed out to them that you may save $40 million on the one end, but the cost to the industries that use coin acceptors, such as vending, such as laundromats, et cetera, cost is going to be between $1 billion and $1.5 billion to retrofit these machines.
Mm-hmm.
So you compare their $40 million savings with the incredible cost to the industry, and it looks like we were pretty successful, not in necessarily in convincing the Mint, but in convincing all the congressmen and congresswomen that we spoke with that we were adamantly opposed to this, and they now understand why. Mm-hmm. And the general feeling was that that was a pretty ridiculous piece of legislation, and the cost to the industry would be way too high versus the benefit achieved. So that was one item, and we also discussed this new Regulatory Flexibility Act, which is designed specifically to monitor all of the regulations that are coming down from all the various agencies and to make them more uniform and more business-friendly. I think you probably know that over the last 3 or 4 years, there have been a lot more regulations put in place than there have been actual laws passed by Congress. So those regulations need to be tempered with small business in mind. And, of course, we presented those positions to every member of Congress that we spoke with, and they were, of course, quite sympathetic to our position. And then, of course, in general, we always try to inform people that we as an industry are certainly part of the solution to any discussion about obesity rather than the problem. And I think we got that point across pretty strongly, and I think everybody pretty much understands that our position is today, through Balance for Life and FitPick, to provide healthy choices, and that the most important word there is choice, that we should be allowed to put forth choice and have healthy products in conjunction with all of the products that we offer. And I think that was recognized. I know there was an agency meeting with the Department of Defense. I wasn't at that meeting, but the folks that did go say that, of course, they discussed that very thoroughly, and pretty much a consensus that we should be allowed to provide choice along with the healthy items that, of course, everyone is demanding as well. So, generally speaking, I would say that we had quite an engaging time. We're scheduled to see over 30 Congress representatives, and I believe we actually saw 20 of them in person between the six groups that were assigned to go to meet with these folks. And that's a pretty good ratio, because many times you end up with, staff members, legislative assistance, and we really got to see a lot of face-to-face and have a lot of face-to-face meetings with congressmen. So I think this was probably, without a doubt, the best we've ever done.
Well, terrific. That sounds very encouraging. Can you speak a little bit about maybe your personal experience talking to your own representative? You know, it
Well, that was one of the things we focused on, as a matter of fact. We all broke up into various groups, and we tried to align our meetings with congressmen that were specifically covering either our home district or where our office was located. Now, me in particular, I met with Congressman Tony Cardenas from the 29th District in California, and that's the district that our office is in. So, needless to say, he was very receptive to everything that I had to say. We had about 30 employees, actually, that live in his district, and we were able to arrange with him an office visit. And he's going to be coming out to visit our office, understand our business a little more, and meet some of the people who are also his constituents, and sometime in November. So I think that kind of developing that kind of personal relationship with a U.S. congressman is relatively invaluable, because I don't see how we could accomplish more than open up those lines of communication between our representatives and us. So I thought that was great. I wasn't the only one that was able to arrange for industry visits. I do know another group, specifically Vic Pemberton and Howard Chapman, who are from Alabama. They went to visit their one of their representatives from Alabama. He ended up inviting them into a luncheon with the entire Alabama delegation. So they got to meet every congressman from Alabama all at one time. So, I mean, incredible results. I mean, and like I say, maybe it's because the congressman felt a duty to do so because they were, in the midst of the shutdown, or they just had more time or whatever. But the results were really, I think, the best we've ever had.
Well, that's terrific. So how important are these public policy conferences to the industry, and do you see them continuing?
Well, number one, I think they're critical. One of the major missions of NAMA, obviously, is advocacy and maintaining relationships with federal and state officials. We have to be ahead of the curve. It's our job to communicate with them and to educate them, because they have so many issues that they are confronted with in any given day or any given week or session. And they really can only know a little bit about each issue. But when they see actual constituents coming in and telling them what they think and then trying to inform them why something is good or bad, the results are, I can't always say it's going to be 100% effective, but for the most part, lines of communication are key as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, so what really made this public policy conference different?
Well, public policy conferences don't just happen without a tremendous amount of preparation, organization, and research. And I have to really give a lot of credit to our Senior Vice President of Government Affairs, Eric Dell, and his entire staff for the incredible amount of work they did prior to this conference in setting up meetings, in getting everything arranged, all the issues, all the policy positions that we had, having all of those prepared for us, really made a difference and really helped us to be more effective in front of all the legislators that we were able to see. So my hat is off to them. They did a magnificent job.
Well, terrific. And do you see these public policy conferences continuing annually going forward?
I do. I most definitely do. I think we're going to continue them. We're probably going to modify them a little bit, maybe do a few different things, maybe have a small exhibition of equipment for sometime. We did this once a couple of years ago. There's a lot of different things we can do, but the key is face-to-face. And one other thing I want to add, this year's public policy conference, we had another little twist. You've heard of the Emerging Leaders Network in NAMA,
mm-hmm.
The young folks that are getting involved in today's NAMA today. And we had 7 representatives from the Emerging Leaders Group with us, and they all participated very heavily in each one of these meetings and were very well received, and they put a new face on the industry, so to speak. They were not just a bunch of silver-haired old guys out there. And there's actually youth coming up, and they have as much interest in public policy as any of us do. And they really made quite a great contribution to the whole public policy conference.
Sounds excellent. Thank you so much for sharing with us today.
It has been my pleasure.